That is Adam Levine in Maroon 5 from the 2012 Sunday Morning. Hello, everyone. This is NC Fro broadcasting from Chattanooga. And what's going on with me this wonderful, what's today's date? Today is the 7th of April. We're in the throes of the weirdness that is spring, but, and the day has started out kind of cloudy. I see a peep, or I saw a peep of the blue of the sky here in Chattanooga for a few minutes, and then we went back to overcast and cloudy. I saw the clouds rolling up over, I believe it's Raccoon Mountain where I am located right now, and it looked almost mystical just how the clouds were forming and rolling out before they dissipated earlier today. And I've just remarked of how cool it is that I'm adjusting positively to being back in Chattanooga, and I didn't think it would be possible, but it's exciting that I get to work and be and do something that I'm halfway good at. I'm still learning. I did work a few hours earlier today, right after I did my usual, again, positive routine. I bought the Sunday New York Times, got my hot meal from Whole Paycheck in Northside. I did not eat all of the bacon and hot links while I was sitting at my desk working, but I intend to probably hit that a little bit later on after this broadcast. I did see that they actually had a pretty decent sale, believe it or not, on beef short ribs that I've actually seasoned and are baking in the oven right now. And I'll actually pair that with, if I have any left, that is a Central Valley Cabernet from my traveling vineyard gig, with some braised broccolatini sauteed in olive oil and seasoned with garlic. However, I have that going low and slow. It's going to be several hours before that's actually ready to eat. So I'll probably just go ahead and braise up some kale seasoned with the pork ham hocks that I actually cooked overnight. For you see, we do like our drinks as well as our groceries here in the Tennessee Valley. And it's just kind of fun to be able to have the fortitude and the desire to eat that well. I would actually go and walk if I could, can't keep seeing all of these wops and yellow jackets just swarming around. I have to find my raid. I know I shouldn't be spraying the bees because of hive collapse, but I don't think anyone has told the hornets that or the Africanized honeybees that, because I can't get stung. I have no pain tolerance, and I'm sorry, little bees, but it's either me or you. I'm just saying. So what's been going on for me besides trying to kill all the bees in Tennessee Valley? Well, first thing is that I can summarize my reaction to the past week as a violent reaction to the lack of positivity. We've had some crazy stuff that's been happening over the past 7 to 9 days with that imposter right in Kentucky posing as that little boy that was kidnapped when he was 6 years old, Timothy Prinzer. His mother basically, I think I told this story on my last episode, where his mother took him out of school early in Illinois, and then they found her body a couple of days later, and she left a note stating her son was with some people that would love him and that would care for him, and you'll never see him again. Well, this jackass in Kentucky who was in his 20s and a drug addict posed impersonating the teenage version of this little kid. And I'm still tripping out about that because, number one, of course, Jackass Boy is in Eastern Kentucky. And everyone knows how I wish Eastern Kentucky, Huntington, and Charleston, West Virginia would just be flushed down the Ohio River. So that ticked me off. And it also ticked me off that there is a trial of some guy, I think his last name is Taylor. Also, again, in Kentucky, he is left in his girlfriend's baby, 10-month-old baby, this was last year, was left in his care. He gets blotto on whatever he's drinking and drugs, and he rapes and murders a 10-month-old baby. So he's on trial now, and he says he can't remember what he did that night because he was so drunk. That ticks me off. And then what ticked me off even more is I love music, and I freely admit that I don't know a lot about rap, but a big name in the rap game was a performer by the name of Nipsey Hussle. I think I was more impressed with what he did in his community with the entrepreneurship and buying up a city block and revitalizing it right in his own hood. They made mention of some conspiracy theory when he got shot or gunned down right in the front of his store because he had former affiliations with the Rolling 60s, or I think the Crips, as they're known in South Central LA. But he was murdered by a player-hating guy that basically was jealous of his positivity and of his success. Shot him down right in front of his store when he was actually probably going to lead the charge of changing positivity in his neighborhood, but his life was snuffed out by another person in the neighborhood. Another thing that ticked me off was an Egyptian national was finally exonerated for charges of attempted kidnapping. Several months ago, some lady in West Virginia accused this guy of trying to kidnap her 5-year-old daughter. When all of the surveillance cameras basically show her leaving, didn't look distressed, and leaving with her kid. And they had no formal association in the store. He just ended up or was in the wrong place at the wrong time and was the wrong nationality because, of course, the accuser was some goofy white chick in West Virginia. Again, annoying. So pissed off annoying. They didn't mention it on the news, but everyone of color knows what was going on with that lady. She accused this guy in an attempt to get him kicked out or get him arrested just because he was from somewhere else. Again, stupid and backwards. And yes, I'm being forced to work in a place like that, which again ticks me off. But the one positive thing that comes out of it, the matter I got, and the more control I got, I was able to write out my feelings and actually be able to broadcast it to share with others. Going further, last and definitely least, our current president, again, talking out of his ass at a speech in Las Vegas, taunts the Muslim lawmaker when she receives death threats. And then the flip side of that, I watched a live broadcast of former President Barack Obama overseas in a youth conference of entrepreneurs and world changers being his usual articulate and positive self and giving encouragement to a group of young leaders on an international platform. We have two dichotomies, a present and a former president using their platforms completely differently. One, after the White House, now over 2 years leaving, had still able to garner respect, class, and encouragement. And then we have another one spreading vile and filth just because he can and just because he wants to be offensive. It burns me up. And it makes me ashamed that he is the leader of my country. But at the same time, there's still sparks of positivity. Out of all five or six of those things that I have mentioned, there's still sparks of positivity, and I'm still encouraged to be positive and to shed a positive word, contrary to all the vile and the filth that is being spread through a lot of other platforms. I hope my platform will be construed as, or being taken as hopefully a work of art, but just to be encouraging and to hear something that's going to uplift your mind and uplift your spirit and not bring you down because it is so negative. I get Bible verses through my email, free service. And the Bible verse from the middle of the week came from Proverbs 15 verses 1-2 and 4. And it basically says, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a hard word stirs up anger. The tongue of the wise adorns knowledge, but the mouth of the fool gushes folly. I would wish that our current president and his administration had read those verses. The soothing tongue is a tree of life, but a perverse tongue crushes the spirit. And then my reaction to a lot of the negativity that was going on last week, I wrote under my moniker, Tennessee Fro, the Unpoet. And it says, is that all you have to say? Lots of words spoken today without meaning or meaning to offend because the speaker was offended by some slight. Is that all you have to say? I'm glad you were too drunk to remember how you raped and murdered that 10-month-old baby. But dude, you don't get a bye. Is that all you have to say? You accuse one of a heinous crime because he was from a different country. Shit. We're all from a different country at one time. Is that all you have to say? To excuse your ignorance, to excuse the hate every time you open your mouth and try to speak on a subject you know nothing about, because it's easier to be on the offensive instead of defending calm and rationality. Is that all you have to say? You are leader of a country and you make fun of another lawmaker when she receives death threats. Nothing you can say will excuse what you're not, a leader who can still speak and encourage young people on an international level, still garner respect after two stints in our White House, although he was not white. Nothing anyone can say will bring that brother back, his life that was taken just because he dared to uplift his own neighborhood. No, I don't expect you to say you're sorry, because that doesn't make it all better. You are a sorry excuse for a human, a waste of skin. Wait, what did you say? Thought not. And that basically wraps up my feelings at the time, but I just released into the atmosphere. And I hope it encouraged someone not to be negative and not to spew vile, and provide words and food for thought to grow and not demean or put somebody or offend someone. So what exactly am I reading? I'm actually, I say all of those words to as a lead-in to clearly a work of art that even the Metropolitan Museum of Art is actually having a celebration of the tale of Genji that was written over 1,000 years ago and by a female. The exhibition runs, I believe, through the middle of June, and it is in New York City, and I'm planning on at least getting up there to not only enjoy that exhibition, but also enjoy the opening of another multi-use art center. It's called The Shed, which I believe is somewhere near Hudson Yard. I have to take a look into that. The opening is actually, I think, this coming weekend, but I'll actually be in Fredericksburg, and I don't think I'll be able to get up to New York for the opening. However, I'm excited about what's to come because I am in a position or will be in a position to have the freedom to enjoy those types of things without being tethered, I guess, to some place that tethered to a job in a place where I despise. I'm short time. I'm going to be able to freely go and partake in things like that. I used to do it all the time when I was younger, and I'm hopeful to do it on a truncated basis now that I'm actually an adult. And my hope is to be not only be able to read and to look at these things online, but also to partake of them and share them with others in the future. So it's going to be imperative that I stay healthy and I still have the financial means to be able to enjoy them. But with that said, I have decided, even though I bought this book maybe about 15 years ago, I am still going to continue reading The Tale of Genji. And one of the things that it was a mistake on my part, you should never start or try to read this book from the middle. You have to start at the beginning because Genji, as well as his father, his dead mother, and her grandparents and their connections, start at the beginning. And the first chapter, the Paulownia court, is where it all starts. And of course, it starts with player haterism in its Japanese form. It was almost laughable when I thought about how the artist Nipsey Hussle was just killed just last week by someone that was jealous of him. But I also remarked upon that or thought about this when I read about how Genji's mother was treated by the entire court, even though she had the favor of the emperor. It didn't excuse her and it didn't protect her from verbal slights and ostracism that was orchestrated by the emperor's first wife. For you see, at the time, in 11th century Japan, not only was the religion more directed towards the female, and that allowed some veneration or equality in women, there were still some traditions like polygamy and things that were actually supported at that time in Japanese society. And his wife, or his concubine, or his first wife, so to speak, had not only had the pleasure of being the first, but she also provided multiple children to him, and as well as an eldest son who was destined to be the crown prince, just because she actually had a strong, just because of her family support. She was a rich Japanese lady that came from a rich and high-ranking family, and she was the first wife of the emperor, and she also bore his first son. Then comes along this upstart that curried the favor of the emperor just because of her beauty. And the first line of the tale, it states, "In a certain realm, there was a lady not of the first rank, whom the emperor loved more than any of the others. The grand ladies with high ambitions thought her a presumptuous upstart, and lesser ladies were still more resentful. Everything she did offended someone. The sad fact was that the girl was without strong backing, and each time a new incident arose, she was next to defenseless." Even though this emperor had, she was in favor of the emperor, it still could not protect her because she didn't have the same maternal backing as the other high-bred ladies. It was more, and it was just a case of pure haterism on the 11th Japanese level. But they took it up a notch. They made this lady, or they worried this lady so poor, bad, that it also robbed her of her health. By the time she left court, she basically passed away alone and almost unloved. She went to the home of her mother's, but she didn't survive much beyond a couple of days. And in fact, she died within about 2 or 3 days from what I understand. And because of the emperor's selfishness, he kept her at court even though she was unprotected. And it just, that made me sad. But one of the things that she actually was able to do before she died was, of course, she had a really cute little kid. And I recall that they did, he was not really named until he was way past the age of death, because kids at this time, not only did adults not live beyond 40 or 50 or maybe even 60 years, children in the first few years of life because of childhood diseases also were perished. But one of the things that they remarked on this kid was just, even as a child, how beautiful he was. And even as a toddler, he was deemed to be a threat just because he was really pretty, but also because he was actually really smart. And I won't bore you, or I won't basically mention the several multiple little phrases and poems that were scattered throughout the first chapter, because I don't really want to comment on something that I have no right to comment on, because I think the meaning of the phrases were basically lost in translation. But to say it, at least the responses to the grief and answers at that time were always given in poems. But the way I believe my translation is, again, the meaning is kind of lost on me. But one of the things and passages that I actually wanted to read to you was, after Genji's mother passed away, he stayed for a time with his grandmother, who, even though the house had been in disrepair, and she herself was grief-stricken, she could not, even though it was requested, she could not send Genji back to court, because she knew that she would miss him too much, and he basically would not. And let me back up. She would miss him too much. Again, she kept him at her side for selfish reasons, even though it was requested by the emperor. The emperor, too much of a punk, could not order her to send the kid back to court, but it wasn't until after she passed away that he was finally allowed to return. But out of everything that I've read and the research I've done over the history and just some of the synopsis of this particular work of art, they always commented on how pretty this kid was. In the first instance, when they describe Genji when he comes back to court, was actually on page 17. And they go on to just, in flowery terms, focus on how cute this kid was. And I'll read for you in brief. The months passed and the young prince returned to the palace. He had grown into a lad of such beauty that he hardly seemed meant for this world, and indeed one almost feared that he might only briefly be part of it. How can you be so beautiful that people fear that it can be taken away? I guess when you think about the cherry blossoms, how they're so beautiful and they bloom so intense, and then they die within a very short period of time. I guess his beauty can be remarked to be the same. And I guess I would have that fear too. When of the following spring it came time to name a crown prince, the emperor wanted very much to pass over his first son in favor of the younger, who, however, had no influential maternal relatives. For you see, even the emperor had to obey protocol, and he knew he could not pass over what was expected, the true crown prince, in order to name Genji, even though he was so beautiful. And also it goes on to state how inconsolable the grandmother was and how crazy it made even the first wife. But the emperor was actually a pretty smart dude. He knew that even though she couldn't stand Genji's mother, there was no way that she would do anything to the little kid just because of how beautiful and was a smart kid. For you see, he now lived at court. When he was 7, he went through the ceremonial reading of the Chinese classics, and never before had there been so fine a performance. Again, a tremor of apprehension passed over the emperor. Might it be that such a prodigy was not to be long for this world? No one need be angry with him now that his mother is gone. He took the boy to visit the Kokiden Pavilion, and now most especially, I hope you will be kind to him. Admitting the boy to her inner chambers, even Kokiden was pleased. Not the sternest of warriors or the most unbending of enemies could have held back a smile. Kokiden was reluctant to let him go. She had 2 daughters, but neither could compare with him in beauty. That's pretty deep. Somehow news of the sage's remarks, let me back up. There was a sage or an emissary that came from Korea, and the emperor wanted the emissary to basically evaluate Genji. But for some weird reason, he couldn't actually ask for it outright. But Genji was, again, the first of his many disguises, was sent, was evaluated, and they knew that he was just brilliant as he was beautiful. And they remark and go on to state that somehow news of the sage's remarks leaked out, though the emperor himself was careful to say nothing. The minister of the right, grandfather of the crown prince and father of Kikoden, was quick to hear, and again his suspicions were aroused. In the wisdom of his heart, the emperor had already analyzed the boy's physiognomy. after the Japanese fashion and had formed tentative plans. He had thus far refrained from bestowing imperial rank on his son, and was delighted that the Korean view should so accord with his own. Lacking the support of maternal relatives, the boy would be most insecure as a prince without court rank, and the emperor could not be sure how long his reign would last. At least if he were alive, it sounds like, he could afford some protection on this little kid, but he didn't know how long he himself was going to live. As a commoner, he could be of great service. The emperor therefore encouraged the boy in his studies, at which he was so proficient that it seemed a waste to reduce him to common rank. And yet, as a prince, he would arouse the hostility of those who had cause to fear his becoming emperor. Summoning an astrologer of the Indian school, the emperor was pleased to learn that the Indian view coincided with the Japanese and the Korean. And so he concluded that the boy should become a commoner with the name of Minamoto or Genji. The month and years passed, and still the emperor could not forget his lost love. He summoned various women who might console him, but apparently it was too much to ask in this world for one who even resembled her. However, somebody reminded him of a beauty of the court who was a princess in her own right. And he sent off plans to have her join his court. Her name was Fujisubu. And Genji, although this is the Oedipalness of this all, Genji never or did not remember his mother, but because he was with his father so much, he actually was allowed as a child to be in her presence, and he formed a very strong attraction to Fujisubu. The emperor even goes as far as telling Fujisubu not to rebuff Genji because she looks so much like and hath the countenance of his long since dead mother. But of course, even though she was a princess, she herself aroused rage in the first wife. And of course, she couldn't stand him. However, and they named her the Lady of the Radiant Sun, which the Radiant Sun was Genji. When he became 12, he went through the equivalent of a bat mitzvah. They cut his hair and they put adult clothes on him. And he was restrained from going behind the screen to visit Fujisubu. A marriage was arranged with one of the ministers of the court and a minister of the court's daughter, but in actuality, who kind of was his cousin. But he still played music for, wrote poetry for Fujisubu, even though he knew he could never have her. And thus ends the first chapter of the tale of Genji. And this sets us up, I'll basically read to you later how it became common knowledge of Genji's affection for his stepmother, even though it was weird. And it explains a lot of the coldness of his first wife, because she knew that she, even though she was beautiful and was high ranked, that she could never measure up to Benji or could even receive the same love that Genji bestowed upon Fujisubu. And in all actuality, for a book that was written so long ago, there are so many of themes that apply even to 21st century life in general. The warping factor or the warping nature of favor, jealousy, and undying love. And I think it's just well written, even though I'm not as impressed with this translation. I think I get the gist of what Marisaki Shikibu was actually trying to say. And I think it does have application even in modern Japan or even in modern society in general. And this actually was a great way to spend my Sunday afternoon reading such great literature. And it was the first novel, and it was written by a female. How cool was that? And I want to thank you for listening to the end. While I enjoy bringing to you this reading, I hope you will now be able to enjoy the musical stylings of one that everyone says I look exactly like, Miss Tracy Chapman in her 1995 Give Me a Reason. Her mournful, bluesy voice talking of unrequited love and also of pain, but also of redemptive nature of love. And I hope you enjoy. And until next time, this is NC Fro signing off with NC Fro is Reading, my continued reading of The Tale of Genji. Have a great day.
Change my mind.